Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So this will record our voices as we speak. And I'm going to press the theme song, and then I'll point at you when you need to talk, Tim.
Hello, Egg Chasers. Welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And all those mugs who decided to have the summer off of podcasting.
Lazy.
We're here for you every single week. And it's a good job as well, because what we've got loads to talk about on this latest episode. Although we do have to make it a little bit snappy, because last week I was in the middle of a domestic argument where JB was quite upset about not being able to watch Love Island.
Oh, I was so angry.
I mean, I've recorded it and sent it to The Guardian. By the way, that argument.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
good
effort. JB, evening.
Hello.
And Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Loads to talk about on this. We've got World Cup Under-20s Championship. We've got Super Rugby. We've got Nations League World Rugby plans. We've got pool draws. There's other big stories. What's the other? I'll tell you what else we've got to talk about. There's one massive scandal in rugby this week we need to talk about.
Oh.
And I want to start there quickly. JB playing touch rugby.
Oh, my word. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I mean,
Just briefly, for people who haven't, if you've just started listening, thank you very much. Very much appreciate it. In previous episodes, and people who've been listening a while, you will know, JB has lambasted touch rugby as pointless. Mm. You should play netball instead.
100%. I still agree with that. I'm going to say, I loved it. But there again, I thought, do I love it in the same way that prisoners like, basic goods like cigarettes, because they've had nothing for so long? And that's basically what happened, yeah. It was just so nice to have a ball back in my hands, throwing it around. We've got a couple of new players who look very, very good. Brilliant.
But it's not rugby. That's what you still maintain that.
No, get this. It was mixed touch.
Woke AF. Nice.
Yeah, I was playing with one girl who played varsity for Cambridge, which is pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. So, a reasonable time was had by all.
Good. So JB loves touch rugby.
No, I do not. No, do you know what? Like I say, it's a perfectly good warm-up game, but as a sport in its own right, ridiculously bad.
All right. We'll get into the rugby that's been played. There's been a few stories knocking around. Mike Catt's going to be going to Ireland to coach after the Rugby World Cup.
Interesting.
Which will mean, as Phil pointed out on our WhatsApp group, which is absolutely spot on, all four England coaches from Rugby World Cup 2015 are going to be coaching in Ireland.
It's because he did such a great job, right?
Well, maybe not. But it's interesting how individually they seem to be doing at least okay, or certainly Stuart Lancaster and Andy Farrell are doing
pretty
well.
Are they just falling into, like, really good situations?
Possibly. Or possibly there was just the chemistry between them. I remember speaking at the time about the kind of suggested fallout or difference of opinion between Farrell and Stuart Lancaster.
Yeah.
I think it's probably something to do with that. Not all good individuals work well as a team.
So they probably have the world's best scrum half. Or one of the best scrum halves, one of the best fly halves. Front row options to die for. I mean, you know, they're in good situations.
They are in good situations, definitely. So. Yeah. No. They had some pretty handy players in 2015, didn't they?
They did, actually, yeah. They did. Well, no, they did and they didn't. Because a lot of those boys I thought in 2015 were basically 1 year past their sell-by date, I'd say.
In 2015?
2015, yeah.
It was a really young squad.
Hang on, have I got the right one here?
In fact, there's a massive number of people that are going to be in this World Cup
yeah.
that Stuart Lancaster introduced into the last one.
Which team were we talking about?
Are you talking about Ireland?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Oh, well, we're talking about the coaches in Ireland, the players that they had in 2015.
Oh, right. Sorry, I thought you were talking about Ireland.
No,
the 2015 squad was very, very young. Also not particularly good, so that's probably why they lost more than their age.
Too much Brad Barrett, that's the problem in 2015.
Not enough. So that is quite interesting. And it also remains to be seen how Andy Farrell's going to cope becoming a head coach, because he's been a defensive coach for the longest time. I'm sure he knows other things as well. I think defence coach, out of all the coaching positions, is probably the easiest. I mean, you're just being really enthusiastic. And that'll pretty much do it.
We're going to go into the Hurts Arena.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, being in charge of the whole shooting match, that's a bit more tricky. So that'll be really interesting to see how he gets
that's on. Post-World Cup. As for the next generation of rugby players, they've been on show in the Under-20s Rugby World Cup Championship. Cameron Redpath. Banned until till the start of the season. He's not going to miss any rugby
till the start of the World Cup. He's definitely not going to be playing in any World Cup friendlies.
Yeah, which
banned for biting as well. It's a scumbag move.
Yeah, it's not
that's
a great not, look.
That's about the lowest you can. That's the what?
Biting,
where's
gouging,
that, where does that rank in that? Gouging the worst.
Sticking a finger up the bum.
So.
Biting's
not bad. I mean, for me,
it's not bad. Dogs play against done for biting. Biting's not bad.
Yeah, the worst of the worst by a country mile is gouging.
Gouging, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think if you're caught gouging, I don't mean hand contact with the eyes, I mean gouging.
Yeah.
That's a life ban for me. Life ban. Biting, I mean, depends, really. I mean, I don't know the context of the bite. I mean, there's a lot of people who've bitten fingers, for instance. I don't really care too much for that. You don't have your fingers in someone's mouth.
There's a clear difference between if someone's got their arm or hand in your face.
Or if you're being fish-hooked.
Yeah. There's a clear difference between that. And then I read the summary, kind of the exact summary of the judicial decision. And it said, I've not actually seen the incident, the video of it, but it said there was a clear movement by Cameron Redpath. He moved his head towards the player and then clamped down on his arm.
I've only ever seen the good side of him, so you know, it's complete shock to me.
The England under 20 side, the England under 20 side generally, discipline was one of the big issues that cost him
massive
progression in the World Cup, which France won for a second year running.
That really surprises me, that, because the way that these kids are brought up now, you know, playing the game, discipline's bloody important.
It's phenomenally important.
Yeah, and it shocks me that they'd be in an academy or playing A-League, or being in this professional, these professional environments, where they do nothing but talk about error count and penalties and that sort of thing, and yet do something as stupid as that. So.
Did you watch either of the Ireland or Wales games?
No, I didn't. I saw brief highlights of the Wales-New Zealand game.
Because the England against Ireland and England against Wales, so they won both those games down to some very impressive skill, and one player who really stood out was Josh Hodge, who kicked phenomenally well and scored a couple of very nice tries. Newcastle winger, one to keep an eye on. But the penalty count, they almost cost themselves the game in both games, particularly the first half against Ireland, where they just gave stupid penalty after stupid penalty around the ruck area, and against Wales, and they conceded three rolling maul tries, which were brought on by giving away stupid penalties. So discipline was really, really an issue for the England team.
Yeah, and you can map that onto the World Cup with the law variations, law changes, and different interpretation by different referees from different parts of the world. That's,
yeah.
I think it could be. It's definitely one to watch when you look ahead to the World Cup proper.
It is, and when Ireland have won their important games against New Zealand in the past couple of years, and when they've won the Six Nations in the past couple of years, their penalty count has been phenomenally low.
Yeah.
It's such an advantage if you can control your players and control the game.
France won again, beat a good Australia team by a point in the final.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the name of the guy that really stood out.
There was So there's obviously Jordan Joseph who stood out.
No, was it? No.
There was Arthur Von Sant, the captain and outside centre. And the
Von Sant.
Arthur Von Sant.
Vincent.
Yeah.
What a name, that
he's their captain. He does look class.
He sounds cool.
He gave a good interview actually afterwards as well.
Does he look cool?
Yeah, pretty cool, pretty French. But gave a good English language interview afterwards. Ah. And the number 10, Louis Carbonell.
Carbonell, that's it.
So his kicking action just reminded me of Jimmy Gopeth. He takes a long run up and he absolutely sprints up as fast as he possibly can and hits it as hard as he possibly can, no matter where he is on the pitch. So yeah, they obviously have some talented boys, as do the Australian team.
Yeah.
They had some really nice runners in the back line.
And, well, I'll tell you what, somebody who was in the French squad in years gone, in previous couple of years, Untermack.
Yes.
It's not called surfing. What's that thing where you chuck a board
bodyboarding
along?
Bodyboarding. Oh, yeah.
Bodyboarding. What's it? There's a skimming.
Skimming
with the top 14 trophy.
That was outrageous.
I think there might be something going on with that top 14 trophy.
There is. I did know this already. It was quite, on the face of it, it does look outrageous behaviour from a massive ego young lad showing no respect.
I love it.
However, it's part of the tradition of that trophy.
What, to go bodyboarding on it?
To bash it up.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. So
did you see the Tempin bowling one?
Yeah. Like the slip and slide.
So the original is now been restored and is kept in in the French Rugby Federation buildings or whatever. It's kept, it's been restored and is there. It's one of the oldest trophies in sport. It was the guy who developed the Olympics, what's his name? De Coubertin.
Oh, okay.
The guy who invented the modern Olympics, Pierre de Coubertin, actually got that trophy made by the guy whose the trophy is named after, which I can't remember what it is now. The boot, it begins with a B. But
oh, yeah.
Whatever the trophy is.
Yeah.
But it became a bit of a tradition. It was bashed up so much, used as a skateboard, used as all sorts of things, so much so that they took it out of circulation and people get a replica every year. And it's part of the tradition do crazy stuff with it.
Do you know who made the World Cup trophy?
No.
Nobody knows because they got it from...
They just bought it, didn't they?
They just bought it from an antique shop, yeah. It was the last part of the jigsaw of the World Cup. And they realised, bloody hell, we've not got a cup. So they went down to an antique store, found this trophy. No one knows why it was built, what it's made for. It's got a pineapple on it.
Yeah. Wow, that's cooler. Isn't it? That's cooler. Yeah. I love it.
So
first World Cup was such a Tim Pot affair, wasn't it?
Yeah, we talked about it upstairs. what else was I going to say then about trophies? No, it's eluded me. Never mind.
Sorry. Took your mind off it. Yeah. So, yeah, that's fine. So, Untermack was in keeping with the tradition.
Yes.
It looked like he was being very, very disrespectful.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Olympics. Do you remember they did the whole torch thing and only the most worthy of worthy people could hold the torch? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So they ran up and down the country and, like, you know, a nurse would hold it and then a charity worker and yada, 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 yada. Do you remember this?
I do remember it.
Yeah, so I was at a wedding and one of the minders for the torch was there. She had the torch in her car. So she went to the car, she got the torch out.
Was it lit in her car?
No.
I thought it could never go out.
No, the flame can never go out, but the torches can.
So
you have a central point.
Every person, there are different torches, they pass the flame from torch to torch.
Yeah. I don't know how they get it through airport security, but they do. Right?
On a plane, it's still lit.
Yeah. Or, you know, petrol stations, that must be tricky. she got this thing out, and it was like interacting with a cult member. It's like, yeah, you can touch it, but you mustn't do anything disrespectful to it. You know, you can't do anything derogatory, nothing sexual. Like all of these.
Nothing sexual.
Yeah, like, you know.
Well, no, you're right. Because I was doing the XFM breakfast show and it was around the Olympics time and they came in with a torch and they were like, yeah, have some photos taken with it. And everything we tried to do to make have a bit of fun with it and get a good picture. That
cricket.
Anything like that. Because we thought exactly that. We'll do loads of things with the torch and that'll be a series of pictures that we can put out on social media. And they said no. They said no to every single one. And so we told them,
can I neck a
go
plane
away,
from it?
Go away. I'm not interested. I do not want a picture with the torch.
Can I snort cocaine through it? No, Tim. No, Tim. No, Tim.
Right, but for the record, I would never have asked that.
Not even for social media. Yeah, it is. It's a weird thing, the Olympics.
Yeah. I can't remember what I was talking about. Oh, yeah, the trophy. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Well, so, we might as well talk briefly about the France squad, seeing as...
Well, actually, let's talk about the other. We've got the one big scandal, which is JB playing touch rugby after
disgrace,
giving it so
hypocrite.
Much hypocrite. Massive scandal. We've got to talk about it. We can't let go on with the podcast without talking about the big scandal from rugby, the other big scandal from rugby. JB, you must be devastated, Matthew Bastereau, in the French squad.
I am going to reluctantly concede that Matthew Bastereau might not be at the height of his powers, but if he was, he'd be in. Is my take on it.
If
he finally hangs up his boots, we'll realise that what we witnessed at his peak was one of the great rugby players. But yeah, he's not in. And,
I'll just repeat the phrase I've been saying for some time now. If Matthew Bastereau is the answer, you're asking the wrong question, and it seems like...
He reinvented the game. No one else followed him in that reinvention.
It seems like Jacques Brunel is on board with that now. But it's quite harsh. Well, I don't know if it is harsh or not. I haven't really made up my mind, but Matthew Bastereau had to announce his international retirement after he'd already been left out of the French squad. He wasn't told beforehand that he was not in. He didn't get a phone call or a text or anything.
I remember Chris Jones from Sale Sharks got dropped by the England team doctor.
What? That was how it was announced or how he found out?
Yeah, it was found out because he was with the team doctor and the team doctor said something like, oh yeah, well, I won't be seeing you tomorrow anyway. Something like that. I can't remember the exact story.
But some real talent. And again, we talked about their young... That's 2 years in a row they've won the under-20s championship. They've got some great young players. And you look at the top teams and the teams in that top 14 final, as much as we give stick about the French having loads of foreigners, they've got some tidy players.
What did I put on my whiteboard again?
Whoa! What's that? YouTubers have seen a lovely, nice little...
massive, yeah.
Long-legged spider. Just coming down.
Going down for your...
Part of the broadcast onto your feet.
For your feet. You put on the whiteboard that they were going to win the Six Nations.
I think the World Cup, was it not?
Well, you did put Six Nations, and you have also put they're going to win the World Cup.
Ah, right, okay.
So,
yeah.
I think you might be wrong twice then.
South Africa France final would be what I'd like to see.
Wow.
They're in good shape. I just don't think. I just wonder if the coach can actually make them into a team.
Mm. Yeah, and on that exact point, they've had such kind of. Just different combinations of players playing in that first 15 for the past couple of years.
Yeah.
That you need pairings, centre pairings, halfback pairings, back row pairings, hooker and second row pairings. That you need lots of time together when you're playing at the highest level knockout rugby. They're going to get very little of that.
I love the look of the squad, though. I mean, I was reading the names. It's young, it's exciting. They've moved on from some of the older players. I mean, if Morgan Parra can't make it into your squad, I mean, you've got some bloody good options.
Well, Dupont is class, Saran as the second choice.
And maybe the best of the lot of them.
Yeah.
Fashionode.
Yeah. But at a World Cup, fly half not being set and cemented and sorted and nailed.
Yeah.
That's a massive worry for France.
Well, it is.
I think Entomac, he's been playing there for Toulouse, hasn't he?
He has, but he's been playing. I mean, he's a great player, don't get me wrong. They're all really good players.
Yeah.
But they're not going into a World Cup with an awesome 10. And you tell me a team that's won a World Cup they haven't had an amazing fly half.
Well, New Zealand in 2011. Piri Weepu and Stephen Donald playing at the end because of Aaron Cruden and Dan Carter.
Do you know, though, there is a lot said about...
But other than that, and that was New Zealand at home where basically no one else bothered. And France, after losing to Tonga in the group stages, made it through to the final.
Yeah, it's quite astounding,
though. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I'd love France. I'd love France to win the whole thing.
Some surprises in the England squad.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, albeit this is the first training squad. There'll be another training squad. There's going to be a 48-man squad. This is just 31 players, not including the players in the guys in the semi-final.
Yeah,
with a couple of exceptions.
It's 31, although two of them are just reporting for medical duty, which is Cruis and Mako.
Yeah,
and it's. It's not players who played in the
semis.
Barbarians or the semis, with the exclusion of Dom Brandt, Marcus Smith,
Ludlam,
Rapava Ruskin, and Tom Dunn.
Right, quite a few.
It is. It is quite a few. But then there's other players who have not been considered.
Which game did Tom Dunn play in? The Barbarians?
England Barbarians. Yeah. Same as Don Brant and Smith.
So one of the big headlines here is it looks like Danny Kerr and Chris Robshaw may well be cooked.
Do you know who he fancies as a second scrum half?
Danny Cipriani?
Danny Cipriani? No.
Third scrum half.
It is Spencer. Now, if this is true, the mind boggles that he spends so much time with the other scrum halves, doesn't play the scrum half that he wants.
I know.
And then all of a sudden goes, I'm taking him to the World Cup. Not that Ben Spencer's a bloody good player, but he's also a very good player in that Saracen system.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he's a system scrum half, but, he does fit the system quite nicely. What's he playing at? I just don't get it.
Well, Dan Robson's back in this squad. He played in the Six Nations, but then he obviously missed the main chunk of the end of the season because of the blood clot in his leg issue. Yep. So I can understand why you'd be reticent about putting all of your eggs in the Dan Robson basket if an issue like that reoccurs in the next 6 months.
But when he had Robson, I mean, bearing in mind...
He barely played
Drop. If you look at this since Eddie Jones took over, it's been Danny Kerr, given no time to Robson when he had him in the Six Nations. He's had Spencer in a couple of squads, but really hardly ever picked him. Now we're on the brink of a World Cup, and they're both above the guy he's been playing for the last 3 years.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's unbelievable. I don't get it. Also, when he had Robson, he treated him with what I can only describe as utter disdain.
Play 2 minutes at the end of the game.
That's just even a joke.
Even
just
in
a joke.
Which one was it? The Italy game. He only came on for like the last four or five minutes.
Yeah.
And then, Ben Young's been your starter. I mean, I'm not saying, no, I am saying it. He's just not a world class scrum half. That's the end of that.
Ben Young's at his best has been phenomenal. I've not seen his best for at least a couple of seasons.
We see it once every few years, don't we? But the danger is once
when England have a great win, he plays really well.
I mean, how far down the pecking order would Ben Youngs be in France?
Oh, he wouldn't be in the squad in France.
Fourth, fifth best scrum half in France, maybe if he was lucky.
It's interesting. I'll say as well. I'm not saying he should be in the World Cup squad, but how Brad Shields is above Chris Robshaw. I cannot
You're
understand.
Not the only person. There are professional rugby players up and down the country who say exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing, word for word. Just don't understand it.
He has, trying to defend Brad Shields.
It's exhausting, I'm sure.
It'd be a good, my daughter does debate club after school on Monday. That'd be a good one to try and take on.
So flexibility is important in World Cup squads, and he can be an auxiliary lock.
Yeah, because England have got hardly any locks that can also play in the back row.
Yeah. Important. That sounds important.
I do actually quite like Brad Shields. I think he's a good player.
If he was that good, he would have played for New Zealand.
The only thing.
Well, interestingly, he was called up, wasn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah, so he was called up or he was announced as about to be called up, and then the story broke of his Wasps.
I'm not saying he's not a good player. Release. I just on the strength of what I've seen, on the evidence, Chris Robshaw's had one of his best seasons ever, club seasons.
Yeah, back half of the season when he was fit, he's played really, really well.
So anyway, I feel sorry that he's not evident. Doesn't look like he's going to have his shot at redemption for 2015 because he's done everything that he could have done.
Yeah.
That said, he may not have got into the final 31 anyway, but Brad Shields may not anyway. And the only thing I can think of in that one is maybe Eddie Jones has gone, well, we've got Wilson or Robshaw because they're very much alike. Shields is different. So I could get that as well. But anyway, we'll see. When do we know when the... Chris Ashton, by the way, has also withdrawn himself from the training squad.
Yeah.
I like that, you know.
He's got an imminent birth of his second child.
I think he's a very wise man. The international camps have started now.
Well, because he doesn't want to break a leg from doing UFC.
Yes, quite.
Yeah.
Well, like the World Cup training squads have started now, and the teams that are in camp, they are training brutally hard, and they've just come off a full season. I think if I'm in the mind space of Chris Ashton, I know I'm a bloody good player. I know I'm probably the best wing in England. I know I'm probably the fastest player in at Sale Sharks. Why do I need to go to another camp and I've got the birth of my child on the way? I think it's a good decision. Now, if they really want him, they rate him, they'll pick him anyway, like they did with Marla. So I have no problem with this. I think it's a good decision.
Well, that's the...
It's interesting, because I think it'll be very difficult for them to pick him now.
Well, then they're idiots. I mean, all that they've got to do is win the World Cup. You know,
they, all. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, that's our only objective. It's not like we're 4 years away and they're trying to create a culture and this, that and the other. They just need to get their best players on the field and they've got a good shot of progressing far. I hope they go out in the group stages, but they have a good shot if they have everyone together. And Chris Ashton is going to be critical for that.
See, that's where, why, because I'm a much less grand advocate than you are of Chris Ashton, because it's one of the most hotly contested positions in England. You got guys, so Johnny May, Anthony Watson's now back fit. Jack Noel, if you can get back fit, was playing phenomenally well. Thokkonen Singer has had a really, really good season. That's even discounting someone like Ollie Thorley, who's come in.
Crikey, yeah.
Who's not in the squad, but then he played in the semi-finals.
Daly's a daily player.
McConaughey as well, who's had a brilliant season at Bath.
But Ashton's got to back himself above McConaughey.
This is the thing. So if he was in the squad, and if he has this time to shine, I'd say yes, I would back him ahead of it.
Well,
I think this is Chris Ashton doing the right thing for his family, rather than backing himself and being confident that
he's tactically withdrawing himself from the front line. I think it's purely a family decision.
I also think he's fairly confident he's a good player.
Where are they going, by the way? Where are they training? Are they going abroad?
So I think this first squad is in the UK.
So why? Because he can be home in
a couple of hours. Pennyhill Park.
It's like all day. I mean, I know.
All day hard work.
I can tell you that some of the lads in camp at the moment, not the England camp, but a different international camp, they are working like full days training.
What's that got to do with him being able to get a car to drive him back to?
Do you think
his house?
If they're in Pennyhill Park, that's a bit of a mission to get back to Wigan.
3 hours, 4 hours.
Yeah, 3 hours there, 3 hours back.
It's only
a day.
Yeah, he's not going to be commuting every day. He'll only be going back if there's an issue.
And equally, this might be really an ignorant thing to say, because there's all sorts of other things at play, and I don't know what their home setup is. And when you're... Now I'm saying this, it seems ridiculous, because if I asked my nearly ready-to-pop wife to, why don't you come and live in an Airbnb just in Hertfordshire? She might not like that too much. So maybe I'll take that back. But if they're in the UK, that's... anyway, it's an interesting one. I don't know if there's more to it. I don't think there is. But presumably he would have had a chat with Eddie Jones and got it. And Eddie would have said,
yeah, and he's done it before.
Fine, mate, there's another camp in a bit. But
yeah, and don't forget, he's done it before as well. He said to Eddie, yeah, I'm not going on a bloody A-team tour. Same situation.
And as you pointed out, he's sort of indicated with his EPS squad that it's all about the World Cup and he just wants the best players, Joe Marler, back in.
Yeah, now interestingly as well, I think Ashton's situation might be a bit different because... Joe, you know, Eddie Jones keeps on talking about test match animals or whatever the stupid phrase is. That doubles as an excuse, which is A, I don't have enough test match animals, but it's a weird sort of selection criteria where in his mind, regardless of club form, he knows who he thinks is a test match animal. And I think he's got Chris Ashton in that category, which helps him out enormously.
I would probably agree with that. Yeah.
Mm. He's going to be one of those touch and go ones for a squad place, regardless of whether he's in this camp or not.
It is so competitive it's going to be the outside really tight back position.
But do you know what? This links perfectly to.
Go on.
When the squad is announced, when the World Cup warm-up matches are done, when the team have just played Italy and are flying off to Japan.
Oh yeah.
That very day.
Oh.
We have a live podcast.
Oh, yeah, we do.
At Twickenham.
Indeed. Now, When is that?
Saturday, the 7th of September.
Perfect. And wouldn't you look great if you went on Saturday, 7th of September, in maybe, I don't know, an Egg Chasers jersey? Oh, and actually, if you get an Egg Chasers jersey now, if you order one now, you also get a free tie. How's that?
Free Egg Chasers tie?
Yep. If you get
Wonderful. Where do you get the Egg Chasers jersey from?
akumashops.com/eggchasers.
Wonderful. Whether you have the jersey or not, which you would look amazing in, or not, that's absolutely fine. get yourself to Twickenham on Saturday the 7th of September for our live show, which is part of a bunch of live shows, actually. This is how you set up for a big World Cup year. This is how you mark the fact that 2019 is here, Japan is coming. The day that England fly out to Japan, come and join us for a live show, previewing the World Cup. It's also our Negroni party, and we've had more contact from people, more on that in a minute. The Negroni thing is going global properly.
Sadly.
And yeah, it's our Negroni party. It's our JB 2020 launch. We've got some special surprises launched, getting prepared now for JB's launch of his bid to become an RFU councillor and cream off all those expenses for himself.
Exactly right.
And it's our World Cup preview with live show, but there's also other live shows there. Brian Moore will be there.
We've got warm-up acts, haven't we? We've got Brian Moore doing a bit of a warm-up act. he's probably sold about 3 or 4 tickets now. Stephen Jones, about half as many sales again. So if you want to see his warm-up acts followed by us, please feel free.
He speaks in jest, of course. Wonderful podcast. Yes. Lots of them will be there. And you can
there are some other wonderful podcasts there.
There are lots of wonderful podcasts there. They're all wonderful podcasts. They're all talking about rugby. And you can make a whole day of it in Twickenham, the home of rugby, where the home of English rugby. Podcastlive.com is the website. Podcastlive.com. Get your tickets. Stick us as your preferred podcast. We'll guarantee you a seat in our pod. And we've got all sorts planned. Cannot wait for that. Podcastlive.com.
Anything else to say on the England squad?
No.
Not really, from my point of view. I'm looking forward to seeing who the other names are when the bigger squad's announced.
Yeah, and who gets the boot then? Oh, did we talk about Willie Hines?
Well, he's been talked up that he might be, he's in the frame to potentially be in the wider squad as a scrum half over Danny Kerr.
I think he should be, you know. I think he's a cracking player. A bit old, but again, they've only got to do one thing, and that's win the World Cup. And if he gives you a better chance of winning that World Cup when the time comes, go for it.
Again, though, he's hardly played, unless you're going to have Cipriani there, he's hardly played with the other fly halves.
I wonder.
Or number eights.
I wonder. Cipriani goes. Willie Hines goes.
Perfect service.
Perfect. That'd be awesome.
It'd be a bold call for Cipriani to go your starting fly half.
Youngs Ford, Cipriani Hines, and you'll have Spencer. Spencer Farrell.
Ah, well spotted.
Interesting. Although it's likely that Eddie Jones will only take 2 scrum halves.
But potentially, yes, you're right.
But knowing Eddie Jones, he'll come up with one of those masterstrokes, like move Farrell to 12, put Ford in at 10, and bring the worst out of all three of them.
There genuinely might be something in this. So let's say we've got Youngs and Spencer are going to go, and Ford and Farrell are going to be in the squad. Mm. If Cipriani goes as the third 10, let's say a scrum half goes down, Hines comes in, and then you've got, and then Cipriani becomes a 10 again. Or a 10 goes down, you bring in Willie Hines and Cipriani becomes a 10. So you keep the partnerships. That might actually be what he's doing.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Here's a question. How much say do you think other players have over who gets into the England team?
Players?
Yes.
Very little.
So perhaps Owen Farrell is captain.
Yeah, but Owen Farrell, but I really like the way that Spencer puts the ball into my hands. That carries some weight, right? So I was
I
was lucky enough to interview Jack Yendall last week. Extra captain, yada yada yada, right? Now, Jack Yendall has never had a look in at England. That's correct, broadly speaking, yeah?
Correct, yeah.
Would it not be worth a fiver to each of his mates, Harry Williams and Moon, to pop it from a scrum one day in front of Eddie Jones and go, do you know what, if we just had Jack here, you know, would that not be like a pretty strong message?
It would be a strong message if it was delivered. It would have to be very, very carefully and cleverly delivered with Luke Cowan-Dickie in the squad.
Yeah. Or if he's scrummaging with, I don't know, whoever, like...
Jack Singleton,
right? They can keep on saying, do you know, Jack Yendall does it this way? Yendall, the way that Yendall likes it, and keep talking and talking and talking. Like, who is this Yendall fella? Get him on the line. And I do wonder if Spencer, if he is the second one, if that is anything to do with Owen Farrell.
Not the way he's played this season.
Yeah, he's been playing very, very well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he does deserve it also. But it's an interesting one.
Yeah.
See if the players get actually a say.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought there'd be much.
Because, weirdly, they do have a lot of say in recruitment.
Yeah.
A lot of say.
Yeah. Well, depending on the club.
Yeah.
Because a club like Leicester, for example, It's a throw darts at a dartboard, recruit that player.
Well, I'm sure
Exeter. I'm sure Steve
Diamond said to Faf and John O'Ross and the other South Africans, "Tell me about these Lions boys, then.
Tell me,
about the Saffers
and the Sharks boys.
And the Sharks boys.
Tell me when the Dupree boys were over. Yep. I'm sure they said, "Tell me about this angry warthog. Tell me what he's like. He sounds good.
Tell you what, this Acker, what's his face?
Van der Merwe
is meant to be an absolute animal. Yeah. He's not going to be better than Rob Webber, but he's meant to be very, very good.
What else have we got from this week? Just kind of related to that one, we talk about Twickenham and stuff, and on sort of the international game, World Rugby have had to basically just accept defeat on their aims to get some kind of Nations League annual tournament standardisation of a global calendar, promotion relegation from the Southern Hemisphere and Northern Hemisphere competitions. It's dead in the water now. They've accepted defeat. It's thought that effectively it came down to Scotland and Ireland.
It's been reported in some quarters as that.
What we've heard is that Wales and England were very, very open-minded.
Okay.
Scotland and Ireland were very, very anti, and that was kind of where that's kind of what we heard.
They needed unanimous decision as well, to get it through.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we heard as well, didn't we, when it was first announced. I mean, the leak allegedly was maybe from Dublin, who knows. Yes, it doesn't surprise me. There's an actually really good article in the Times, Sunday Times. It's a Stephen Jones article about this, actually. And it's, you know, the Scottish and the Irish don't want any kind of movement. And the one which really got me is New Zealand are now demanding half of the gate receipts of any match that they play, regardless of where it is. Which, of course, suits them down to the ground because they've never built themselves a stadium. So
they can't make that fly, can they?
No, just don't play them. I mean, they claim that they're the biggest draw in the game. Maybe they are.
They are the biggest draw.
Well, they're not going to be a draw if no one will play them.
True.
And they've
Very
got a
true.
Real big problem then.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, build your own stadium. Easy.
Just on the balance of the Rugby Nations Cup, whatever it was going to be called, Nations Championship, where did you stand on it? Where did you two? Were you for it, against it?
I didn't like it. I think I have a better solution, personally.
But why didn't you like it? Because on this solution, I think it's quite interesting. I mean, looked at it, I think it boils down to, when you boil the kind of status quo proposal and this alternative proposal, it boils down to two things. The status quo, with the San Francisco agreement in place, which is more tier one v tier two,
Georgia hosting a July tour against Six Nations sides, Japan, USA, Canada hosting tours, England and other countries going to Pacific Islands nations.
Hugely in favour of that.
Yeah, I think all that's great.
So I'm massively in favour of that. The downside of that is there was no overarching deal to give significantly more money to any of the nations.
Yes.
So if England go and play in Fiji or Samoa, Apia, that will raise a bit of money, but it's not game-changing.
Well, I also hear
the difference is this World Rugby proposal, while you wouldn't have got that, it would have been two separate tiers, so England would not have been travelling to Apia or Suva. This would have had massive amounts of money.
£6.1 billion
over 12 years.
Would have been distributed liberally across all nations.
That is massive. So there's a clear trade-off. And I'm not saying which one I think is best. I like the San Francisco agreement, but I also like the idea of that much money coming into the game.
I like the idea of and I'm not massively in general, general politics, I'm not in favour of huge redistribution of wealth. I don't agree with it. I believe in everyone having opportunity and being able to make the most of it, but I don't want to take away from people that have earned it, and that will link in with something we'll get onto in a little bit. But I do think in this particular occasion, I actually think there's a Brexit analogy here.
Uh-oh.
This is always dangerous.
Well, okay, so I think it's like, so the EU, you could argue, is a protectionist bloc. Well, no, it is a protectionist bloc, and that's fine. Some people think it's a good thing, some people think it's a bad thing.
Yep.
It's a protectionist bloc that are defending what they have, and as a result, it makes it harder for countries outside of that protectionist block.
Do I need to hit my hacksaw music?
No,
let's hold off.
No, it's fine. So no, because it's your perspective. Some people think that protectionist block is a good idea. Some people think that protectionist block is a bad idea. I'm not judging it. I'm just saying what it is. But as a result, but I think if you have a vision and a long-term approach, either solution can be great. But I think in this case, Ireland and Scotland have shown no vision whatsoever.
I don't know.
They're protectionist in a negative way, I think.
Well,
they're holding on to what they've got and not looking 10 years down the line and not forgetting the fact that I think where it got to with this Nations League plan is World Rugby were willing to say, all right, we'll only have promotion or relegation every 4 or 6 years even. Will you sign up to that?
No relegation, no promotion. I would veto that every day of the week, as should Scotland and Ireland.
But you would veto that, but then you 100%. Would lose the tier 1 v tier 2.
No, not necessarily. So my solution is pretty much exactly what we have now.
What's your objective? Can I just ask, what if you were running rugby, or if you were in charge of a governing body of a nation, even either or?
Yeah, yeah.
What's your big overall objective?
Okay, two different questions there. So if I was running the union,
what's the mission statement?
If I was running the union for Scotland, say,
yeah,
my primary concern is for the Scottish game, not the world game, and so
I think the two can be the same. But anyway,
I mean, what you're asking Scotland to do is basically sacrifice themselves for the greater good, and hopefully, there'll be a bigger pie and this, that, and the other. No, I wouldn't do that. Now, for world rugby, I think the solution's clear if they do it properly, which is, I've said it so many times, lots and lots of Six Nation type tournaments, all on an equal footing, and then just come the summer tours and the autumn internationals, you all mix and match outside of your conferences, for want of a better word. So you've got the six nations going on, you've got the championship going on, you've got tier 2 Six Nations, you've got all these other things. And they need to stand on their own feet, because if you start taking Georgia
Over what timescale? Because we've had this before.
Yeah,
what timescale are we talking about that the tier 2 Six Nations need to be able to get up to a level all on its own? Because that's bollocks, mate. That's bollocks. That's never going to happen.
Why?
Not in our lifetime.
Yeah,
not in our kids' lifetime.
Look at the progress of Italy over the last 20 years, playing in the top division.
Maybe they'd be better playing below.
I think they would be better playing below, but they're still not going to catch up to the top division.
So my point being, I think Scotland and Ireland are being massively short-sighted and holding on to what they've got. And I think a little bit of reality check. Rugby's a tiny game globally.
But it's a massive game domestically.
Well, no, it's not a massive game domestically.
It's not. No. Look at the crowds.
Just wait. So, if we say the objective is we want a World Cup where 24 teams could win it, which the Football World Cup has.
I'm with you.
Right? So, if that's the objective, how do you achieve that objective? Status quo doesn't achieve it. The definition of madness is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. We're going to get the same niche game with the same half a dozen teams that can win it for the whole of our lifetime. And maybe that'll be great for us, but if your objective is growing the game, this is going nowhere.
I don't think there's any amount of money, okay, which is going to get you to 24 teams who can all potentially win the World Cup. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I would...
Oh, let's not bother then.
I would push back on the idea that we're doing the same things over and over again. I mean, World Rugby have made huge strides with teams like Georgia, teams like Spain, and if you compare where Georgia are now compared to where they were last World Cup or the World Cup before, they're getting stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. The USA are getting stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. Argentina are getting stronger. I mean, Argentina, everyone thought, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to cut it at the top end of rugby. They've had some fantastic wins in the World Cup, and now the Jaguares look like they might be on the way to the first Super Rugby final. So these things do work. I'm pretty content with it the way it is.
That example you said about Jaguares and Argentina, how did that happen?
Yeah,
including them in a competition against bigger nations.
They are also playing a lot of domestic stuff at a lower level. So an Argentine 15 is always playing against Brazil or again. And that's actually that's the more important one. I mean, the more important thing for Argentina, in my mind, is to get really, really niggly close domestic, not domestic, international rivals in that region. That's why Six Nations works, because everything's so close and the rivalries are so intense. You've got to cultivate those rivalries to grow the game, grow the interest. Because the downside to the Jaguars example and the Sunwolves example and Southern Kings is when you just make up these teams and you try and force a rivalry on them, it just doesn't work.
Let me flip it around just from a different perspective and we can move off this because we have been over this before. But if you ring fence the Premiership, are any rich people going to go and invest in the Championship? No.
Maybe.
But Hans-Peter Wild, for Germany, for example, if he thought, I could have a team in the Six Nations, I could have a German international team in the Six Nations, he would throw some of his billions at German rugby.
So this is why I disagree with you so, so strongly. Because if I had lots and lots of money now, I would want, I would put it into a few clubs. One of the clubs I'd be very interested, not clubs, nations I'd be very interested in funding more, would be Spain. And not because I want to get Spain's Six Nations, it's because I'm in love with the idea they've got this horrible rivalry now with Romania, and I want to make sure they beat Romania each and every year. And that's what would inspire me to invest in them.
Yeah, well, okay. I think you can take my point, though. I'm just trying to look at it from different angles and see, and well, I just think from all angles.
You need rivalries. Rivalries go to the sport. Otherwise, it's like, we're going to play whoever it is. And that's why some balls failed, I think. But there is definitely some logic in what you're saying. You do need more exposure to tier one against tier two.
You need aspiration. Mm. You need genuine aspiration.
Yeah, but isn't the World Cup not good enough for that? The summer tours and the autumn.
Well, let's see how the World Cup goes this year.
Doesn't bring 6.1 billion though.
No, not yet.
On the Sunwolves, there are far more factors at play at that, like the strength and the money being thrown around in the Japanese top division, meaning the Sunwolves couldn't attract the best players playing in Japan. Huh. They had the choice of the third best players playing in Japan, and you try and throw them into the meat grinder of South African or the Jaguares or against the New Zealand teams.
So looking back at it, was the Sunwolves just a fairly cynical ploy to try and get some money out of the Japanese market?
It was ill, from my perspective, and I'm not into the detail, it was ill thought through of how it would interact with the money that the top teams have. Mm. And there was no link between the top teams. They're not a feeder team to the Sunwolves. They run completely at odds to the Sunwolves. So all the best Japanese players and all the best foreign players playing in Japan are not playing at the Sunwolves.
Yeah. Oddly, just listening to what you said, oddly, I actually think the World Rugby's plan, where it got to in the end, where the promotional relegation was only every 6 years, I think that actually would cultivate what you're talking about far better than... And I like lots about the San Francisco agreement, but I actually think it will cultivate what you're talking about far more, because if you chuck £6.1 billion and spread it around tier two loads, whereas only one team can go up every 6 years, then you are going to have those rivalries, but you're going to have much better teams in those rivalries.
Just one thing before we move off this from me. Have either of you been watching the Cricket World Cup?
Nope.
No.
Are you aware of how the group format, the pool format works?
Yeah, I'm looking at this. It's odd.
It's
like a coefficient type thing.
It's brilliant. It's a round robin, but it's a 10-team round robin.
Okay.
So over a 6-week period, all 10 teams play each other once. So everyone plays 9 games. And it's very similar to how the Rugby Nations Championship, whatever you want to call it, would have worked with 12 teams.
Call it whatever you want now, it's not happening.
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore.
The
but 12 teams
Israel
all playing.
Israel Falau Cup, whatever, doesn't matter.
That is brilliant from a spectacle, because you get the best teams playing each other and every game matters. But I'm kind of... I like the status quo, I just wish there was a way of monetizing the status quo better.
Yeah.
The money is so important. As we might come on to him when we're discussing Izzy later.
Well, and there's still conversations to be had about the CVC offer for the Six Nations is still on the table.
Yeah, but just in terms of money, another money decision this week. We mentioned the French squad before. Ali Verretti Raka, Fijian, born and bred, supremely talented winger. Is in the French squad. Yeah. If Fiji had more money, he would be playing for Fiji.
Yeah, and this is after Bernard Laporte said it would not happen.
Correct.
Yeah, but...
But I don't blame them because...
But he's such a deliciously talented player.
Eddie Jones would do the same. Joe Schmidt would do the same.
Gatland would do the same. Yeah.
Yeah, I have no
Steve Hansen would do the same. Checker would do the same.
And also, here's the other thing about these Fijian players, not to go back over all ground, but that is their goal. Their goal is not to play for Fiji. Their goal is to play for France or to play for England.
To get as much money as they can to send it back to their family.
And I quite like it. I quite like the romance of, you know, you leave your island, you leave your family, you go over, you know, to... somewhere which essentially doesn't even speak your language, especially in the case of France. You do really well. You get into the French team. It's an amazing thing.
But what if you could have all of that and you could go and play for Clermont and win trophies, win the league, win trophies in Clermont, but then go and represent his country and go and represent Fiji.
And get paid
the same amount.
Handsomely for it.
Yeah.
Do you know what? If I had a choice of international teams to play for, I'd play for France.
Yeah, because you love eating cheese and not training.
No, I look. Yeah. Cheese, passe, not true.
It's the one part of the game that...
Who would you rather play for? Argentina or France? Don't say England. You can't want to play for England.
Oh, I'd love to play for England.
Over France?
I'd quite like to play, if I could pick any nation, I'd quite like to play for South Africa. I'd love to be so arrogant.
Yeah.
Like, no, you are so much better than everyone else.
We're not going to go over all ground. We know where I stand. I think it's an absolute sham, and it's one place that football... massively has a huge one over rugby. Rugby is a total joke when it comes to national teams and nationality. Yeah, but it's a joke.
Isn't half the German national team from Turkey?
Yeah, but they're German nationals, aren't they? They're educated.
The German nationals or the parents often were the ones
There's like loads of Brazilians all playing in different nations. I mean,
Diego Costa. I think he played for Brazil and Spain.
Yeah, yes. There was Eduardo Silva. Croatia and Brazil? Brazilian Croatian?
You can name a couple of examples, but generally speaking, there is no...
It's certainly not in England.
No, there's no English players that play that aren't
Although
English.
Although I do seem to remember...
Owen Hargreaves.
Canadian-English.
Canadian-English,
English,
German.
English mum, though, didn't
he? He did, yeah.
He
didn't grow up dreaming of kissing the three lions.
No, he grew up in Canada, then played in Germany.
Claudio, what's his name? The Chelsea keeper. Remember him?
Claudio Rent...
I want to say Ranieri. It's not Ranieri.
No, it's not Ranieri.
Cudicini?
Oh, Carlo Cudicini.
Carlo Cudicini.
He never played.
No, but there was talk of calling him up, and that was a scandal.
Yeah, it was. Well, anyway, we've been over that. It's loads.
Yeah.
Well, we've been over the Carlo Cudicini scandal.
We've talked about Carlo Cudicini endlessly on this podcast, on this rugby podcast.
Yeah, so...
Should we talk
the conclusion of that conversation? What were we even talking about?
I wish we could keep as we are now with more money and have giving more money to every team.
I think we
every
all
team.
Agree we'd like more money.
Yes, more money. More money for Egg Chasers tours, tier 2 tours.
I'll tell you what I am looking forward to though. Or summer in Tbilisi because Georgia are going to host Six Nations sides in July.
Is that right?
Interesting.
So,
because you could do it as a stopover on your way to, anywhere else.
Summer in Tbilisi sounds good to me.
My sister was in Tbilisi 2 weeks ago.
Was she?
Yeah.
I was listening to, I've listened to it. I think it's about the third time I've listened to it over the years, but the Wrath of the Khans, Dan Carlin.
Oh, yeah.
And I've just...
That doesn't make you want to go to Tbilisi more, though, does it?
I've just at the bit, just at the bit where the Mongols arrive at Tbilisi and the Georgian Knights think, we've got this, we're badass, and get absolutely savaged.
It's meant to be a very cool city.
Genghis Khan was a pretty bad man, wasn't he?
He was a bad man.
Naughty boy.
I always thought he was Genghis Khan until Dan Carlin. He always said Genghis. But he pronounces a lot of things very oddly.
He does.
Anyway.
Hey, look, before we move on, can I tell you what I did this weekend?
Yes, please.
I went in an Ariel Atom.
So that is very, very exciting.
Are you aware of what an Ariel Atom is, Tim?
No.
I would say an Aerial Atom, but I might be totally wrong.
Dan Carlin says Ariel.
Yeah. Ariel.
My next door neighbour had a friend around. Who had this Atom
Yes, it's one of those little things.
Yeah, in the driveway.
Yeah.
Now,
it's basically like a stripped down, it's basically a street legal race car.
I do not like going fast in cars. I don't even own a car now. So, you know, I went from a bike into that thing. I have never been so afraid in all of my life. Yeah, the feeling is indescribable.
Just being that low to the ground.
0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds.
Oh, this was on a road or an air?
This is on a road.
Because I, the thing that scares me about going in cars like that is you other road users won't see you because you're so low down. Yeah.
Oh, it was.
Do you have to wear a helmet in it?
Yes, and there's nowhere to. This is the other thing. You sit in there, and you put your hands on your knees, and you're like, I need to hold on to something. I need to hold on to something. There's nothing to hold on to. Nothing. And the engine makes a noise.
Hug the driver.
That, like, it makes this noise. I thought the guy next to me was screaming at me. So he's like, whoa. It's like, God, he's into this. It's, like, it's just like, it, the engine, the sound of it. Yeah, I only went 2 miles. Maybe 4 miles in total. I will never, ever get in a fast car again.
Play it cool when you got out? You're just like, yeah, cheers. Nice one.
No,
yeah, that was all right.
Yeah, it was all right.
Crawled out of it. And you can see the wheels too, which sounds obvious. No, it doesn't actually, because you can never usually see wheels. So you're looking where this wheel's going.
And it's going like sideways. And
yeah, and we're sort of edging to, I mean, it feels like I'm going at 200,000 miles an hour. And this wheel, see, it's coming towards the edge of this country lane. It's like, oh my God, if he comes off the edge, we're just dead. We're just almost off the dead. I never want to go in a fast car ever again.
Your left leg going for the brake?
At one point, right, this is not a joke. Again, only four miles was travelled. I thought, maybe I'm going to be better off if I just close my eyes. Although that's a terrible idea.
That's how I got through a couple of roller coasters when I was a kid.
Oh, it's just
I would have loved that.
That you wouldn't, you've not experienced anything like it.
It's that lack of control. If you were driving, you probably would have been okay with it. But it's like there was a video of people in really severe turbulence over Russia, and like this one woman walloped her head on the chair. It was unbelievable. But you just saw people praying and stuff. It's the lack of control.
Yeah,
horrendous.
Yeah.
Well, I do another podcast you might know called Pilot Episodes with some pilots, and they are terrible passengers. Don't like one of them. Apparently, I think that's right. Doesn't particularly like flying unless he's actually flying the thing.
Wow.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Speaking of exhilarating experiences and total lack of control, did you see any of the Super Rugby quarterfinals this weekend?
What a link. I saw none of it.
No, I just know Jaguares beat the Chiefs.
Jaguares,
their first ever semi-final.
In the lowest scoring game of the weekend, Jaguares, 2-1, beat the Chiefs.
Well, they're in good performance.
They're cheating.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a problem when they weren't very good, but now they're good. It's a massive problem.
Yeah, it's really bad. Real bad.
Yeah. And everyone knew that was the purpose.
Yeah.
Like, everyone knew it was going to be kind of 80%.
Who are the European players that they're missing, by the way?
Imhoff, Cordero, Issa, Nicolas Sanchez, Herrera the prop, Figolo, Saracen's prop.
Yep.
Is
Pet, the Bath guy, is he still there?
Bosch, but I'm not sure if he'd be near the team anyway. About between 5 and 10 who would be in the squad or pushing for the squad.
What a worrying thing for England.
England and France, and well, JB's France.
I think France.
Death taxes and Argentina somehow pulling it out of the bag when it comes near a World Cup.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time Argentina really pulled it out of the bag against France?
2007.
It was an incredible game.
Oh, they did it twice in 2007.
That was just Hernandez chucking up bombs for 80 minutes, wasn't it?
But it was also, who was the fullback? Was it Tuchelet? There was a fullback who scored I can't remember.
Might have been him, yeah.
Might have been. But there's a fullback who scored a brilliant try in one of those games. Like a 60-yarder. Yeah.
So
No, that was Tuchelet wasn't around then.
Can't remember the scrum off. Might have been Pichot. I doubt it.
I think it was Pichot and Contepomi were both in that team.
Yeah, so it was double Contepomi's in the centre, 12
Hernandez was... Hernandez you had Leguizamon and two Fernandez Lobes. and Albacete was in the locks.
There was Leguizamo.
And you had
Coletto was the 15.
Coletto, there you go.
Yeah.
And you had he scored an amazing try. You're right.
Yeah.
And you had the old Leicester prop, Aguja.
Yeah.
No, Aguja. Yeah.
Yeah. Looking at the team now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing to watch because they just hammered everything high. Everything went in the air. And you know when journalists are making stuff up because the things don't last? And one of the things that they made up was Hernandez's range of kicking. Do you remember when the banana kick became a thing for about a week and then never became a thing ever again? It's like resourcing the ruck. That was a thing for all of 1 week and now is no longer a thing.
Thank God.
But they were doing like an analysis of all the different styles of kicks that he has. Like, this is nonsense. He just kicks it.
Wasn't he in Stephen Jones's best all time?
Wasn't he the 10?
Well, he was the 10 in the best.
He was the 10
in the all time best team,
alongside Warburton and Dan Lydiot.
Warburton, you can make an
Warburton,
argument.
Warburton, yeah, yeah. Warburton, I got no problem with him being in the conversation. Lydiot, well,
yeah, yeah. Wow.
Enough said of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. But Jaguars did win 21-16 in a very close game. Then Crusaders comfortably won in the end, comfortably beat the Highlanders, 38-14.
Good.
But it was only really the last kind of 20 minutes that Crusaders pulled away, thanks to Liam Squires getting yellow carded for a no-arms tackle. The Brumbies comfortably beat the Sharks in good all-round performance from
good
the
to see an Aussie team
from the
well.
Brumbies. And the Brumbies have got an interesting mix because they've got some talented boys. They've got a few young lads.
Is that the Argentine scrum off?
Cubelli, no, I don't think so. He wasn't playing, but the young scrum off, Joe Powell,
yeah,
scored a very nice try. He played really well, and he's got a really nice combination of this young Aussie scrum half with his kind of flowing golden locks and the elder statesman, the captain of the team and inspirational player, Christian Leoliafano. Who's playing really, he's back playing really, really well. And God, he was never a big boy originally. He's obviously lost a load of weight. But he still puts his body on the line.
Now, is he playing defense. 10 for them?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I always think of him more as a 12 who can play 10.
No, he's played quite a bit of 10 because when he came to Ulster, he was having to play 10.
Oh, this is why you like him.
There's a lot of things to like about the man. He played really, really well. Their number eight, so they'll be travelling to the Jaguares. Their number eight, Pete Samu, who scored two tries.
Oh, he's out, isn't he?
He looks like he's out with a hamstring strain. So that's bad for the Brumbies, good for the Jaguares.
Good for us. Well, good for me.
And then the final game of the weekend, or it wasn't chronologically the final game of the weekend, probably it was higher scoring, it was exciting. It was a bit nervy if you're a Hurricanes fan. It was 35-28. To the Hurricanes against the Bulls. And this was a game that the Hurricanes should have comfortably won because they had so much in attack, but kept on making silly mistakes, defensive errors, a couple of brilliant tries by Cornell Hendricks, the Bulls winger, who, God, he does not look like he's going to be as fast and athletic as he is. He's got this chubby, rotund face and rotund belly. He's so quick and so powerful. He scored a couple of great tries, but 7 points down in the 81st minute, he dropped it on the 22 with an opportunity to score,
shocker,
which if it was converted would have levelled the game. So thankfully he didn't. But the Hurricanes now go to the Crusaders. And Richard Mwunga for the Crusaders, he scored two tries himself.
He's playing some
brilliant rugby.
Jaguars are now officially the best team in Africa, which is quite something.
Correct, yeah.
That's impressive. I would not have predicted that a few years ago.
I don't think I would.
And the Brumbies boys, so they finished their game on Saturday night, Australian time. They then, I think the following morning, the Sunday morning, they got a coach from Canberra to Sydney, jumped on a flight from Sydney to Auckland, and then a flight from Auckland to Buenos Aires, which was, had they lost that game, none of that would have happened. So they'd had it all planned, but basically finished the game, 12 hours later, they are starting what would be a 24-hour, best part of 24-hour journey.
The travelling in that league is just something else, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
are those semi-finals this weekend?
This weekend, yeah.
Cool.
Two good semi-finals. And if my beloved Hurricanes beat the Crusaders in Christchurch, then Jaguares get a home semi-final. A home final.
Wow. Now,
do we know anything about Jaguares outside of how good they are this year? I.e., are the crowds growing? Are they getting people through the door?
It was a good crowd this weekend. I can't say for all games, because they spread it around a little bit. They go to Salter and
Rosario.
Rosario. Mm. But Buenos Aires, it looked a great atmosphere when they won.
And actually, Super Rugby crowds have been all right in a lot of cases. And I saw a thing about the average home. I saw a list of average home attendances, and they're a lot better than you think.
The Brumbies,
the top like four were all English teams, like out English. Of the whole world club rugby.
Oh right, okay.
And there were Australian teams that were above Munster.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Munster don't even sell out their stadium for a bloody semi-final.
Exactly. So. I'm saying this. It was surprising. The top four or five were all English.
Oh crazy! Well, I just remember
the English average attendance is always boosted because you have like the Clash and Big Game 8.
Yeah.
That kind of thing a couple of times a year.
Big Game 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Whatever. Big Game 8 was the best one.
That was
maybe
that'll lead on to our next talking point.
Maybe that was the hashtag. Oh, crikey, we've got Heineken Cup groups.
No, oh. that wasn't the hashtag, but I can't remember what it was.
No, it was something like... it was something like explosive picks, or like it wasn't that, but it was something like,
if you can remember, like, what the funny hashtag was that Premier Rugby had,
big tackle picks, something or, like that,
or it was I can't remember what it was.
Yeah,
hot streak. I don't know what it was. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah, Heineken pool draws. Yeah, you can have a look at that.
Yeah, Heineken pool draws.
We're not going to be any games till like November.
Sale, I tell you what, Sale have got a good group.
It could have been a lot worse for Sale. Yeah. Could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
Benetton have got not bad group as well.
Yeah.
So, Benetton could potentially finish second.
One of our listeners came. I'm going to have to find the name to try and credit it, but they came up with the Saracens pool as the name, the pool of debt.
Debt. Yeah.
Very, very good. Very good. Well,
that
done.
I mean, that is a brutal pool for Ospreys. Saracens, Munster, Racing 92. And the poor old Ospreys.
Ospreys are probably wishing they weren't in existence.
If you didn't have jobs, you wouldn't have to do this.
But that's brutal, because only one team's getting out of that pool.
Yeah.
Well, there's so no way two teams are getting out of that.
Here's my take on the Heineken Cup now. There are no weak pools anymore. That doesn't exist. The best you can hope for is a pool so good that they all beat each other. That is the only way you get even a slight reprieve
chance, and you pick up an extra bonus point here and an extra bonus point there.
The only way that you progress in the Heineken Cup now, it is an absolute monster of a competition, and all those changes which I had to fight for to make it more competitive have been worth every inch.
Who do you reckon's happiest? I reckon probably Leinster.
Yeah,
with Lyon, Northampton, and Benetton.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, as they are now. I mean, Benetton, I think, have been to Dublin twice and beaten them. FYI. And certainly Benetton have beaten them at home. I expect them to do exactly the same.
And FYI, Richard Wigglesworth is massive on Love Island, tweets about it all the time, and he's just tweeted...
Don't ruin it!
No. Spoiler he's alert. Just tweeted, capital letters, rate this, and then four crying with laughter emojis. So it's obviously, there's something good going on, so we should
wrap it up.
Okay. So you can go and watch it, Jay.
Have I ever told the story about my dear friend, Steve Elliott? He once told us not to ruin the end of, Ross Kemp in Afghanistan?
Don't spoil the ending.
Ross Kemp.
He dies, mate.
Don't tell me the end! What do you think's going to happen?
So come on then, let's bloody talk about Izzy Folau.
Oh, the elephant in the room.
So Izzy Folau has...
How are we going to talk about Izzy Folau more than the Heineken Cup groups? Go on.
Well, because the Heineken Cup's in November.
Yeah, and hopefully in a few weeks we'll never have to talk about Izzy again, and then we can talk about Heineken Cup.
Happen.
I know, it's not going to happen. Another week, another news story.
I'd love to talk
story.
About him as a rugby player.
Oh, but, one of the best. One of the best ever.
But I don't like talking about him in this current context, because it's just an ugly scourge for rugby in general.
So,
Israel Folau, as we know, he's suing Rugby Australia on the basis of wrongful dismissal.
Yeah.
Illegal
case,
as we've talked about before. The development is he's sought legal funds for this suing of Rugby Australia. And he's doing all right. In the first 5 days, he's got about 800,000 Australian dollars of the 3 million that he's after.
Yeah, from over.
What are you giggling about?
It's
nothing to do with what we're talking
about.
It's
definitely not.
JB is so focused right now.
It is.
Well, you got to share it. Come on.
Now, I'm looking for an article which I read today about Israel Folau, but it makes me laugh. Though you carry on, Tim.
No. I was just explaining what had happened. Go on.
Yeah. So, it's making me laugh because people are so entrenched in what they believe that when you tell them someone might believe something else, they are astounded. They are gobsmacked. They don't know how to handle it. They start frothing at the mouth and tweeting, and they can't control their thumbs. You know, it's game over. And that's basically what's happened. I mean, they cannot, and I say they, the people who are attacking Israel Folau relentlessly and viciously, they can't believe that people have gone and donated money to Israel Folau. And I was reading a story from some hack, and I call him a hack in the worst possible way. He was writing about it, and he was saying, oh, it must be the Christian lobby, you know, and they're very powerful. No, 8,000 people feel strongly enough to give their money to Israel.
10,000 now. 10,000. Just shy of 10,000.
10,000. There's 10,000 nasty, horrible bigots.
Yeah. And, who do you think that these people are? Like rich oil barons that, you know, are evangelical Christians and preachers? No, they're not. They're normal people who agree with Israel. They might not even agree with what
he
says.
No, this is it. Yeah. I bet a lot of them don't agree with Israel. But, you know. Don't agree with Israel Folau. Or they may agree with the people on the other side that he expressed his beliefs in a really clumsy, silly way.
So the reason I call this behaviour hackish by this journalist, and I wish I could remember his name, is he then goes into details of, like, well, Israel Folau's contract was worth millions. This is the best one. According to reports, he owns a Lamborghini. You're a fucking journalist, mate. If he owns a Lamborghini, go and find out. Don't say, according to reports, he owns a Lamborghini. According to reports, this journalist beats his wife. What reports? You know, he either does or he doesn't. And then they start talking about his property portfolio. How dare a young sports star have a property portfolio? As if, what, is this a liquid asset that they can immediately liquidate and then go and pay his legal fees?
By the way, I think Israel Folau should forget about rugby and be given a job as head of the World Bank, because he managed to make his property portfolio increase. I noticed over in the space of a few days, he managed to increase it from 5.6 million Australian dollars to 10.5, I read today. He's almost doubled his property portfolio.
Israel Folau's got a Lamborghini, a £500,000 Lamborghini, according to reports. I mean, that's more than half his year's earnings. Actually, he either does or he doesn't. But the way that they're reporting it, and now they're, you know, his wife. I mean, his wife plays netball for
New Zealand.
Is it New Zealand or is it Thunderbirds? Who are they?
She might play for a club team. She plays internationally for New Zealand.
Doesn't matter, but she plays netball. And her loyalty primarily should be to her. Well, it shouldn't have to be, but it is to her husband. And you completely understand that. And she shared a link. So these
and the same people will be going, Chris Ashton, what a lovely thing he did for his wife, which we said earlier we agree with. Sometimes your family comes first.
Yeah, and so now
a lot of the time your family comes first.
They are contacting her netball federation asking, oh, will any discipline be taken against them? I don't know what these people want. I think they just want him to suffer. They don't want to be proven right. They want him to suffer, and they want him ritually humiliated. It's absolutely awful. That's basically the world for Israel Folau. Oh, and that's the other thing. Since when did it become a reasonable defence to list everyone's assets and say, oh, well, you've got enough money, mate, so therefore, you know, there's something really unsavoury.
Envy.
Yeah. Like, oh, well, you've got enough money.
Envy.
And if you give to this Just Giving page, there are some absolute cowards out there who...
GoFundMe, but yeah.
Who are tweeting?
That's right. We should get that clear, because the people who want to go and lobby GoFundMe to take his thing down, you need to make sure you don't go to Just Giving.
No, if you're going to lobby to take it down, go to Just Giving. Leave GoFundMe alone. Apparently, because there's starving children out in the world, and you've decided to give money to Israel Folau,
that's the ridiculous.
You are now a bad person.
I'm
That was ridiculous.
Well, judging by this logic, everything should be measured by the standard of starving children. So, you know, every time I go buy a packet of crisps, maybe I should have given that to starving children.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time you walk through the turnstile of a rugby union game and pay your money.
That's £20 for watching rugby when there's starving children.
Exactly.
Yeah. I read a very good book called Against Empathy by Paul Bloom, that friend of the pod, CJ, bought me a while ago. And he, one of the kind of chapters points out the hypocrisy of that type of statement. If you really believe that is the highest priority, why are you doing anything else? Why are you not devoting all of your time to generating money and
And it comes back to it, and I tweeted something out similar. And I just want to make the point, because there'll be some people that'll be listening to this thinking, oh, Tim and JB and maybe think Israel Folau was right to post that social media post. No, two things can be true at once. You can have a principled stance on one thing and a principled stance on another, which are slightly incongruent at times or different. That is possible. What we're seeing, and I think there are, I actually think genuinely, and this might be arrogance on my part, and I'll take that. I actually think far more people think the way I do than think the way these very noisy minority on Twitter think. But you wouldn't know that because people like me are scared to actually say anything from the prescripted, this is the only truth. He's an Israel Folau is an evil man who should never ever be allowed to do anything again.
There's one last thing to this, which again really annoys me, is the idea that because he's earned money, right?
Yeah.
People do not understand, and specifically if you're a sports fan, you need to educate yourself a bit about this. When you have a job like a rugby player, your cash flow is important. Everyone's cash flow is important. Just because you get paid more than someone, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have more money. You might have more outgoings.
And generally speaking, sorry to interrupt, but generally speaking, when you earn more, and this is any job, this isn't just rugby players, when you earn more, your outgoings raise.
Exactly right.
You get a much bigger mortgage because you buy a bigger house.
Boo-hoo, he's had a million quid and now he can't afford. You know, it's important. He was in a 3-year contract. He probably has financial commitments which run along those 3 years. If you cut off anyone's source of income or even reduce it, it is incredibly, incredibly difficult to continue to live to standards or even meet your financial liabilities. I don't understand it.
No, I don't. You're right. But this is notwithstanding. At the moment, we do not know, and this is the point, we do not know if he has been wrongfully dismissed. And if he has been wrongfully dismissed, well, what problem would anyone have with him getting what he legally, in the eyes of the law, deserves? And we don't know how that's going to be. I think the envy and the way people on Twitter... every time we talk about this, I say, go and read Ugo Mouni's piece in The Guardian. He's a devoutly religious person. And in terms of values and the way he treats people, he's a brilliant human being. Mm-hmm. And his Christianity is a humongous part of that. And some of the best people I know are religious people.
Yeah. He tried to steal Johnny Sexton off us, so I've not forgiven him for that.
So read Ugo Monier's Guardian piece, because it shows that there is nuance here, nuance which a lot of people on Twitter don't want to acknowledge. And if you stray from the prescripted opinion, which is just...
Oh, and by the way, how have we got to a situation where every rugby writer, every commentator has the same identical, boring, dull view which they got from someone else? Because that's basically where we are now.
Yeah.
So I'll say one other thing that's worth checking out as a balanced, nuanced position. So Nick Heath, who did quite a vocal blog.
Well. Did it really well.
A little while ago. So he was on... It's not often I recommend other podcasts, and it's definitely not often I recommend other Christian radio podcasts. But Nick Heath went on to Christian radio.
Good for him.
And had a very frank and open debate about why he, as a member of the LGBT community, has issues with what Israel Folau has done. It's a really interesting and nuanced over about 40-minute debate on the rights and wrongs of the topic that adds a lot more. It adds a lot more context than his initial 2-minute position.
It's obviously, clearly wrong.
Of course,
but you know, if Israel Folau thinks people with learning difficulties and stutters should go to hell, so be it. So be it.
Like, well, it's that classic phrase I will come back to again and again, and this is very different because people always come back to the contract. It's very different from the contract. I understand that, and if Rugby Australia have legally dismissed him and that's what they want to do, they can do what they want.
Yeah,
100%. I haven't got a problem with that. if they're legally allowed to, if they haven't acted legally on the basis of the Fair Work Act with Australia, then Israel Folau deserves everything he can get. But and it's but overall it's sad, but the 100% is nuance here.
There is. I'm not a Folau supporter in this instance, but I hate some of the stances that some people take. But the reason why I'm not particularly on Folau's side is because I just feel he's brought it on himself. He had full knowledge of the consequences of what would have happened if he did that. And so I struggled to find sympathy with him. And also that the plea video was one of the cheesiest things I've ever seen. With him playing,
I've not seen it.
Have you not actually watched it?
He's a great performer on the rugby pitch, not on camera.
He's not an actor. He's not a deliverer of great material. And there's this like cheesy, sad. It's like an X Factor backing piano music. You know when they have a sad story on X Factor or Britain's Got Talent
or on Love Island. And like, actually, nothing tragic happened, but they play the music anyway.
Exactly, but that kind of stuff playing in the background.
It was pretty bad. Or on the GoFundMe thing, which is the latest. I mean, there was one thing we didn't even talk about before where. The way that he was reported in the papers and what he said versus what they said he said last week was outrageous. When he did a sermon in church in which he said it was reported that he's targeting transgender children.
Yeah, I saw the headlines.
It was awful because what he actually said was, and whether you agree with it or disagree, what he said was parents aren't allowed to make that decision for their minor children, so their children 16 and under, the government can overrule parents, and that's wrong.
Do you know what?
That's all he said, and I actually agree with that.
No, I'm not saying a word about it.
Whichever way you look at it, Israel Folau's initial thing to spark all this off and his posts over the last couple of years, which are unedifying, wrong, insensitive, clumsy.
Yeah, just stupid. Stupid.
They're wrong. The way people are responding is, a lot of people think that they're responding in a very virtuous way. They're being so unkind and nasty, and it's really unedifying as well.
That is one of the phrases that came up in that podcast, is the intolerance of tolerance in the Nick Heath Christian Radio podcast. If you want to listen to it.
How on earth did he find that?
So he tweeted it out.
I'd love to listen to that.
It's worth listening to. If you follow a link on Nick Heath's Twitter, it is worth listening to get. It's two interesting and knowledgeable perspectives on the whole thing.
I just wish we could, like, actually, you take away the sort of strict religious scripture. I wish people could be a little bit more Christian. Mm. Ironically enough, in the way
Christian
that they
values,
kind of deal with it, the fundamental Christian values.
Why do I feel we've missed a big rugby story?
The Pro 14 groups.
Pro 14 groups.
Brutal groups for your Benetton. Not a bad group for my beloved Ulster.
Well, I think you'll just be relieved not to have to play us again. Until the final.
Could get it. Yeah, it's unlikely that we'll get each other in the knockouts. Because if anything happens, we'll both be finishing third.
I really enjoyed Ravenhill. And it'd be a tremendous opportunity to go and watch Benetton at Ravenhill.
Well, it will happen one way around.
Talk is cheap. You keep saying this. Talk.
No, we went to watch Harlequins there.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, you did.
But so, we've not been to watch Benetton yet.
And apparently, according to who told me this, I'm going to name drop someone, though.
Let's head to Treviso.
The guy who should have played for the Lions, second row.
Should have played for the Lions.
Yeah. You'll know as soon as I say it. Plays for Glasgow.
Oh.
Toulis?
No.
I don't remember his name.
Townsend? No.
No. JB said he was Swinson. Swinners.
Tim Swinson.
Absolutely robbed of his Lions. Four man of matches in a row or three in a row or something like that? Didn't even get a look in. But big Tim Swinson, when I went up to Glasgow, and having a little chat to him, he said it was a lovely town. He went there as a travelling reserve or something.
I just say if we do go...
you've been there, haven't you?
No, I haven't been there. If we do go there, it's fortunate my missus, hopefully your wives, are equally terrible at geography and don't realise how close Treviso is to Venice.
Venice.
Yeah.
Keep that on the lowdown. Because
I got on a train to go to, I think it was Milan, from Verona. Got on the wrong train. Ended up in Venice, which is obviously the other side of the country. missed my flight, got had to get off the train, got fined for being on the wrong train with the wrong ticket, rebought my ticket, went from Venice. It's like going from Manchester to Glasgow rather than Manchester to London, then getting back on the train at Glasgow, and then going to London. It was a grim old afternoon.
And that's why you always travel with me.
That's exactly why I travel with Phil.
And just think, if we do go to it, how good would a Negroni taste in the old country?
Oh, perfect.
Negroni would taste disgusting, and that's where we should leave it, because there was an amazing video tweeted to us at Rugby Podcast of...
It's like amazing.
Negronis have become the punishment on a stag do.
It's an amazing video. It's so funny.
If you want to know...
I laughed out loud watching
that. Yeah, I laughed out loud.
Negroni on tour from Harry G at the underscore justice 86. Go to at Ruby Podcast. It's second top on our feed at the moment. It's such a funny video.
Can I just add one more thing? Not rugby related, but, you know, kind of like in any other business thing, which a lot of other pods do, which I thought I might add. Me and Phil were included into a thread this week, which is literally the funniest thread I've ever read on Reddit of old people not being able to use social media properly. Now,
yeah,
I'm not going to tell you what's on there because I wouldn't do it justice.
Yeah.
If you can find old people on Facebook thread on Reddit, it literally had me crying. Yeah. It's brilliant.
Any other business, Phil?
No, that's enough for me. I'll let you boys go and watch Love Island.
Well, you're not watching it?
No.
I'll ask some Wiggy then, Jay.
Right, okay then. Well,
all right, so Rugby at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Pinned at the top there is the link and all the details for our live podcast. We really hope to see you there. We're absolutely buzzing by the number of people that are on board. And we hope you're going to want to come and join us. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.